on a bad trip, how bad could it be? I mean, do you have some data? Like, and I'm not talking about screaming and going through a primal moment, because that could very well happen, because that's what's supposed to happen. But like, what's the worst that could happen here? Do people die?
But in people that have depression or anxiety or PTSD, their default mode network is too active. And so they get in these like ruts of rumination. So they're stuck thinking in sort of negative patterns or cycles, often about themselves. And so psychedelics allow for activity in that part of the brain to decrease. And when you do that with a therapist, so you're doing psychedelic assisted therapy, you can kind of capitalize or maximize on this new feeling of what it feels like when that activity is decreased, and maybe form new patterns and new ways of thinking about things.
Looking for no bullshit conversation about mental health? Find Learn From People Who Lived It wherever you get podcast. Search it using all one word: Learn From People Who Lived It.
Welcome to another episode of Learn From People Who Lived It.
Hi, I'm Sherry, and I am from the world because I'm a nomad.
This we will explore. What story are you here to share today, Sherry?
I'm here to share a story about living a purposeful life, because I've noticed along my path that many of us are living a distracted life.
Who do you hope hears this?
I am hoping that people who can resonate or benefit from the story hear it. And if that means it's one person or 1,000 people or just you and me, I'm fine with it, as long as somebody benefits.
There and it maybe is, right? Yeah, yep. Cool. So as long as you get something out of it, or I get something out of it, or our listeners in our community get something out of it, we're good.
We're good. Yeah, we're so good. We're already good. I'm already having fun.
Awesome. The timing of this interview is just really wild, and I'm going to walk people through just a quick story before we jump in. Do you mind, Sherry?
Of course not.
It's so funny how, you know, everybody who listens to this podcast knows that a few years ago I went through a life-changing retreat, and one of the things that I really, really stepped into is this space of I let go and I trust the process of life. I let go and I just trust that what's happening is supposed to be happening, and I don't have to fix it. I don't have to change it. I don't have to control it. At the end of the day, that's what that was all about. And about 3 months ago, I was reached out to by a mutual friend of ours, and she runs a ketamine center here in Phoenix, Arizona. And she said, hey, you know, you should come down. You should see the center. You should see what we're all about. And as you guys all know, I've tried just about every drug there is, I guess. And I was like, yeah, let me go down and see what this is all about. And so just last week, Sherry, I went to her ketamine center, beautiful center, and had my first experience with ketamine. And so I am no joke. I'm only about 10 days off of my first time. And then so to now get a chance to talk to the Sherry is a chance for me to maybe even learn more about what the hell happened and what I experienced and what it all means. So that's my long ass way of saying, like, I'm super excited you're here.
That really is perfect timing. And I, the audience probably doesn't know this, but we were supposed to talk before, and it got rescheduled because of travel plans. It was many months before. And since you're talking about trusting the process, it's kind of ironic that now we're talking right after your ketamine experience. So
meant to be. Is it ironic, or is it just the way it's supposed to go when you chill the fuck out and you let it roll and you don't try to control every single thing that's happening at every moment of the day, right? I mean, come on.
I agree.
Yeah, but it's hard. It's hard to step into that mindset, and it's really, really tough to do it, especially with the story that's playing on in somebody's head. And this is going to lead me to my first question for you. Okay. Everybody listening has some story running in their head about who they are, what they're all about, you know, what their value is, what their belief systems are. You know, we're cycling through all of our thoughts throughout the day. And so we all have this story. I love it. Courtney McDermott, who we've had on the podcast several times, puts it like, almost all of us wake up every day, we go to the library and we check out the exact same book. And so, you know, we keep going, we keep perpetuating that whole thing. And then if you do something like psychedelics, i.e. ketamine, you have an opportunity to do something to the brain to help rewire a couple of things that actually produce a pretty incredible result for some people. Now, I'm really careful always to say, Sherry, and I'm sure you agree with me, psychedelics are not for everybody, and there's actually a certain group of people that should never try them because it could be very harmful for them. But based on what you know and you are doing most of your days, how could you, and I want to start right here, how could you explain what ketamine does to our brains and why it could be a useful tool for somebody? Let's just start there, and then we'll start to unravel this a bit.
Yeah. Ketamine works on the NMDA receptor in your brain, which is a part of your brain responsible of many things, memory and emotion. And how it works, from what we do know, and of course we're still learning so much about how the brain works, is that it increases neuroplasticity in the brain. It allows your brain to form new connections. Yes?
I want to pause you right there. When you say neuroplasticity in the brain and make new connections, can you even simplify that a little bit for someone?
Yes. Okay. We go to you gave a great example. We go to the library and we check out the same book every day. So that is a connection in our brain. Go to library, check out this book. Go to library, check out this book. We have these patterns that sort of are our SOPs. They kind of decide the way we operate every day. Some things are even feel like they're beyond our control, like when we get up and brush our teeth. And so when I say increased neuroplasticity, it allows new connections to form in the brain so that you might go to the library and check out a different book. Or you might say, I'm not going to the library. I'm going to go to the park. But that's, you know, really what I'm talking about. And our brains are neuroplastic. They are able to adapt and change. But as we age, especially after the age of 18, it is hard for us to have increased neuroplasticity in our brain. Not impossible, but difficult. It can be achieved sometimes through meditation and breath work and prayer and different things. But ketamine and psychedelics are one of the few substances that we know we can take, and they really do increase the neuroplasticity in the brain. So that's one area or way that ketamine works. And another way that psychedelics work is that they reduce activity in the default mode network in the brain. And I'll explain also what that is.
Yeah, shake it down.
So our default mode network is really important in our brain because it is active when we are reflecting. Maybe you're going on a walk and you're thinking about life or the day. Or you're in the shower and you have those shower thoughts, it's probably your default mode network. It's good, right? But in people that have depression or anxiety or PTSD, their default mode network is too active. And so they get in these like ruts of rumination. So they're stuck thinking in sort of negative patterns or cycles, often about themselves. An example being like, if I walked into a room and I tripped, and let's say it was a room full of people, my default mode network will be active and I'll be thinking for weeks like, oh man, everyone saw me trip. Like I'll feel so bad about that incident, right? Because that part of my brain is too active. And so psychedelics allow for activity in that part of the brain to decrease. And when you do that with a therapist, so you're doing psychedelic assisted therapy, you can kind of capitalize or maximize on this new feeling of what it feels like when that activity is decreased and maybe form new patterns and new ways of thinking about things.
guys, it's a fucking game changer. Okay. Like what she just talked about. Like what she just mentioned, what she just talked about. It's so unbelievably true. And, you know, I oftentimes will make this analogy around close friends. And so why not bring it up here with my buddy, Sherry? But, you know, there's never been a drunk somebody could use. But conversely, there are certain drugs that you can take where you can get a high that really benefits you. You can go through, you know, I'm going to call it a high, but maybe a better word would be journey or experience, right? But that's the difference, right? Like for all of the people who choose to drink all of the time, you know, we're learning a lot more about that whole thing. And what I'm going to say is step into this world of psychedelics, find out why you drink. That's cool. Like, I mean, seriously, sometimes you will be shown these things if you want to go and look for them. And I'll tell you, when I did my ketamine experience 10 days ago, I went in there with the intention of getting to the root of my addiction. And I went in there to get to the root of so you don't know this about me, Sherry, but when I was 23 years old, I witnessed my father having a heart attack and I tried to save his life and I couldn't. And so I have what I think is severe PTSD from that moment. And I was real curious about going into this ketamine experiment and figuring out like, am I still hanging on to some shit? Like, is there still some operating system that's set up around that event? Because if so, I want to, you know, calm that voice down a little bit and move into a different type of operating system. And I didn't see either thing when I was going through my ketamine journey. And so I didn't get any more clarity on addiction or I didn't get any more clarity on that PTSD, but I can tell you, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on this because I'm guessing you're around people who try it all the time. I don't know, maybe you have too, but for me, my first journey was just unbelievably like tranquil, very relaxing, the woman that was on the journey with me literally wrote down 6 or 7 or 8 times, like just keeps taking deep breaths, you know? And so I was just having this total moment. And that's how my first experience worked for me. Now, I still kind of feel like some things are happening post experience. And I want to ask you about that, but what kinds of stuff do you see? Or if you did it yourself, what was your experience like? And help people understand, you know, that not every experience is going to be the same.
Definitely not every experience is going to be the same. And it's a huge factors are your set and your setting. So we talk about this a lot in the psychedelic space. So your mindset, the intentions you go into your therapy session with. 1 second, I just need to call. So the intentions you go into your therapy session with, that's your mindset. And then your setting is your overall surroundings. And these two factors, again, they play such a huge difference. They make such a huge difference on the experience you're going to have. And you still can't, even if you control those two factors, predict exactly what's going to happen. There is an element of trusting the process and surrendering and just, you know, allowing to happen what is meant to happen, which may sound scary for some. I'm curious, before I go into more details of like what I've seen and experienced, you went into your session, you said, with very clear intentions of wanting to work on stuff from your childhood with your dad. What was the setting like? What did the room look like? And did you have someone there with you the whole time?
Yeah. So it was a beautiful, beautiful center here. And they're one of our resource partners now. And so the people can link to them through the Learn From People Who Lived It website. But they offer 4 different rooms and each room kind of has its own vibe and feel to it. I was in the Cherry Blossom room. And so it was really awesome, right? It's just beautiful cherry blossom prints on the wall. And we had aromatherapy going. And I was in like what was probably one of the most comfortable reclining chairs that I have ever been in. She was sitting by my side the entire time with my journal open, just writing down everything that I was thinking and saying. And she had curated this playlist that was in my head, and yeah. it was just so awesome. And I really wonder, like, you know, what's going to come out of this, and we'll get back to that. But I know you were just asking that, and then you wanted to keep going. So please do.
So that setting sounds beautiful. And now it's no surprise that you had this like very tranquil, peaceful experience because yeah. you're surrounded by cherry blossoms and aromatherapy and it sounds like a awesome therapist.
Spa day, right?
And,
yeah,
great music. Very different than if you were doing this like at a loud rave and doing very, very different experience. And I think that highlights an important point of some people when they hear about psychedelics, they have this negative connotation. There's a lot of stigma and taboo, and there's stories of people having bad trips, but it really all goes back to set and setting. We've seen clinically that people don't really have bad trips. They can have difficult experiences, meaning they will have to process that trauma from their childhood.
For sure.
That's not always fun, or you know, relive a traumatic event. But those like bad trips that we're talking about don't really happen when you have the right set and setting. When you're in a place full of cherry blossoms or water, or sometimes there's with the theme of like trees. There's different. I've seen different themes of this. Playlist is. I'm so happy you mentioned that because it's so important to the psychedelic experience. And it's very hard to get right. Because think about it. You have to kind of account for all people's different music tastes and what they're going through and their background. So curating a good playlist is not an easy task. Definitely not my strong suit. But having said that, some people can have a first experience that is like yours, that's tranquil. And some people, their first experience is like super intense, very transformative, but you know, they go straight to that the root of their trauma, and they're there and they are reliving it. And it is like not pleasant in the moment when they're doing it, but it's pleasant after to know that you've gone through it. And I don't know if there's a formula of like what leads to one experience versus another, so much as this is sort of the beauty of psychedelics, that we go into this altered state and we're trusting our guide, our therapist that's with us to help navigate the waters for us.
It makes it a lot easier, and it makes it so that if you relive some of this stuff, and like I said, I had a really peaceful, tranquil journey, and I really, really owe that to the work that I did starting, you know, almost 3 years ago at that retreat. Like there were so many things that I set down. I went through all my inner child wounds. I figured out, you know, just how to regulate myself. Just all of the details that docs will say you got to get right if you want to feel good. And, you know, I've used plant medicine my whole life. I've used cannabis recreationally for, you know, most of my adult life. And it's always been an interesting experience for me. In a lot of ways, I give a lot of credit to just being able to smoke a joint after my dad died, because it helped me like slow down, and it helped me, you know, it opened up my mind a little bit, and it allowed me to see a bigger picture in a time that felt like devastating and terrible. And conversely, I've seen other people, like when they have that experience, they go down the road of alcohol, and their lives are suck after that. And so, you know, psychedelics, plant medicine, they're all kind of swimming in this same big ocean together. And it's just cool to me that we're getting to a point where, I mean, guys, listen to this. This is badass. So Sherry is the CEO and co-founder of Entheia Ketamine Assisted Therapy. And what's so fucking cool about this, pardon my French, but this is worth getting excited about, is that we're finally at a stage in life where there's a mental health company dedicated to providing access to safe and affordable psychedelic assisted therapy, beginning with ketamine therapy, as a public benefit. What I'm saying is, like, you could work for a company that would partner with these guys and trying something like ketamine could be part of your benefits package. It's so about time. It's so cool. But I also imagine you must run into a thousand roadblocks and, oh, hell no, we could never do that, right?
You would think. I mean, probably in part, yes, because otherwise everyone would be doing it right now. So we're on a journey, but I'm pretty optimistic about where this journey is going. When I started or helped start the company, the world was in a different place.
What year was this? Like pandemic time?
2019.
Okay, right before.
And, you know, the world wasn't as open to psychedelic therapy. And I got into this space because previously I was consulting to the UN and the World Bank, and I had pitched this to them. Like, I had gone to these very large organizations.
If there's anybody that needs it, they do. Let's go.
Well, I had pitched it to them more in like line of the work we were doing in very resource constrained, poorer countries where there's a lot of suffering and trauma and poverty. And so, you know, they looked at me like, are you high right now? Like, what are you talking about? I was like, we should do psychedelic therapy in refugee camps. We should like, you know, go to like conflict areas and like there's people with trauma. Like those are the ideas I was having at the time, and definitely got shut down. And so then we can talk about it more later if it comes up, but I left that line of work and got into the psychedelic space and helped start this company. And I thought I would get, like you're imagining, all of those no's and all of those people being like, absolutely not. Except COVID happened. And in the last few years, we've seen mental health on the rise. People are unfortunately like lonelier than ever, more depressed, more anxious, addiction and alcohol use has gone up. The Surgeon General has put out a warning that 76% of employees are experiencing some sort of mental health symptom. It's like burnout and stress is the number one reason people leave their job. So employers are dealing with all of this, and like, don't even get me started on the cost of this to employers. We're spending over $200 billion. You know what? If you add up all of the things, I can share the math with you, but it's like trillions of dollars that we're spending on treating mental health, plus the cost of unproductivity, plus the cost of absenteeism, plus the cost of like hiring new people. So employers are definitely feeling it. And then they introduced new mental health options during COVID. Most of them, like 7 out of 10 employers, I think, introduced some sort of like mental health wellness type offering after COVID, large employers, but they're not seeing results. And why are they not seeing results? Sorry, this is a long answer, but
no, I love it. Because I can't wait to tag on to what you're going down here. Here we go. Keep going.
But like, why are they not seeing results? Because essentially what everyone is doing is they're offering more of the same stuff. It's like, okay, yes, Here's like a quicker way to get your antidepressants, or here's like a quicker way to talk to someone, which talking to therapists is really important. I'm not saying it's not, but when you have complex treatment resistant trauma or depression or addiction issues, simply talking to someone statistically is like not going to cure you. It will make you feel better, but not cure it. And so we've created more of the same thing and people are still suffering. So last year, 69% of employees said they're still not getting the mental health care they need. That's after all of these new initiatives. And then on top of all of that, like why it's easier for me to talk to employers is because, thank you to like the media and the press and champions in the space that are opening doors, you have Netflix documentaries, you have people like you doing this podcast with me, you have Mike Tyson and Joe Rogan and Elon Musk and several people, Aaron Rodgers, openly talking about how beneficial psychedelics are. You have CNN and Fox and like the VA and really bipartisan support of these modalities. And yes, I would love for employers to just all sign up tomorrow so their employees have access to this. And I'm extremely grateful that that the perception is seems to be more open.
Okay. I can't. No. Listen, I can't love what you just said. Even I could love it more. So let me try to say what you said in an even different way, which is like, the reason the mental health crisis will never get fixed is because of that little nugget you offered up, which is, if you go see a cognitive therapist, and I'm saying this, everybody, as somebody who's been down this road forever. I've been seeing a therapist since I was like 24 years old, and I'm 50 now. So that's a long, it's like 26 years if I'm crunching the numbers right. And I will tell you what she said is so true. Like, there's no fixing of the trauma. You can't undo the alcoholic father. You can't undo being exposed to pornography at 6 years old. You can't undo watching your dad die when you're 23 years old. Those are what I call my trauma trilogy, by the way, Sherry. And so you can't undo these things. They happened and they leave that permanent mark in your brain. That's it. End of discussion. However, when you experiment, if you're a candidate and it makes sense for you, if you experiment with some of these psychedelics, what people are finding, and please back me up on this, Sherry, but what we're finding is that thing that you said at the very beginning of our podcast, which is we're reprogramming in a way, and we're learning how to move on from those things that were holding us back. And especially, we could probably talk about this too, but with regards to PTS, post-traumatic stress, it's significantly helping people with severe PTS in a big way. So I just served up a whole ton of stuff. You go ahead and run with it. I'm Aaron Rodgers, yeah, and I'm throwing you the ball back.
No, you're not Aaron Rodgers. You're you. So let's quantify some of the things that you said, and you're absolutely right. One, with clinical trials of MDMA and psilocybin, and just for the audience, if they don't know what I'm saying, MDMA is the active ingredient in Molly or ecstasy. Psilocybin is the active ingredient in magic mushrooms. So in clinical trials with these two medicines, we see anywhere from 60 to 85% of people will do 1 to 4 sessions with those two medicines. Not both, I mean, either or. And they'll do that in a short period of time, maybe in 3 to 6 months. And then at 1 year follow-up, 68 to 80% of people will no longer present a diagnosis of PTS or PTSD or depression or addiction. And these are people who were severely had severe PTSD or treatment-resistant depression. There's a smoking cessation study showing 80% of people that did psilocybin therapy and they were smoking prior, I think, a pack of cigarettes a day for several years. And the 80% of them are no longer smoking at 1 year follow-up. So you're seeing like incredible, incredible results. But then speaking about ketamine, because that's the one that's like here, legal, approved, and available to people. With Entheia, from the members of our plan, so the employees that have access to ketamine therapy via Entheia, what we saw at 1 year follow-up is, I think, even more profound. We saw, well, I shouldn't say more difference, but excites me because it's not in a clinical setting, it's in a real life setting. We saw an 86% reduction in PTSD. We saw a 67% reduction in depression. We saw a 65% reduction in anxiety, and we saw that 82% of people that completed ketamine therapy, like via Entheia, at 1 year follow-up, they were no longer on antidepressants. 82%. That, to me, is like the closest thing to curative I've ever heard.
It's moving in the right direction. And what we have to, like, here's the truth, right? Like, you have to get people to care enough about themselves and not like what everybody else thinks. And I always say, like, a psychedelic medicine, like, that speaks to you. And so if you're somebody who's even had the thought, like, God, I wonder if I should take ketamine, or I wonder if I should try ayahuasca, or if I should try psilocybin, like, I'm telling you that you're already being called to it. And so it's worth exploring a little bit further. I really believe that, like, look into it some more. And here's what's kind of cool about Sherry. And it's a direct parallel to my wife's the same thing. She was in the DARE program in high school. She never smoked, never drank, never took drugs. And to this day, like, she'll have some bubbly or whatever that stuff is, but she really isn't into it. Meanwhile, her husband is the polar opposite. He's like, yeah, I'll try that. Let's go. And so it's super cool that it comes from people like you who can understand and relate to others who go, drugs are bad. You should never do them. They're awful, because you used to share that perspective, right?
I mean, yeah, I can still relate. I still don't drink or smoke cigarettes, and never smoked pot, and grew up in a more conservative, traditional household, and still think that, not that all drugs are bad, clearly I don't think that, but very, like, frankly, still think, like, you know, if I had kids, I would want to warn them against trying drugs, especially in high school.
Sure, for sure.
So I still carry a lot of those traditional ways of thinking. And
it's a nice way to put that.
And I'm so open to, wait a minute, like, you're telling me, like, I can take Adderall and Ritalin and, like, copious amounts of opioids and sugar and caffeine, but I can't take this mushroom that is going to help me, like, be a better, more connected, more loving, more grateful, more all of these things person. Like, something is wrong with the way we are classifying drugs. Like, in all honesty, so, like, sugar is my biggest drug.
For right? sure. Yeah, without question. But I'll say it again, like, you have to get people that really want to pour into themselves and care about themselves. And, you know, you see this in every part of life, and I'm guilty of it. I think we're all guilty of it from time to time, which is, like, the story you live and you know right now is easier, and you know it, and so it's comfortable, and so you stay in it. Because what would you do if it all worked out? Like, what would you do if you could set down that thing that you've been carrying on forever? For me, what would I be like if I could set down the story of not being the dude whose dad died in front of him, or not being the dude who had a tough upbringing, or not being, you know what I mean? There's so much stuff that's connected to those stories that we tell ourselves. And I'm telling you guys, you don't even realize how many different ways it's operating and ruling your life. And you're making decisions on this stuff all the time. And hey, here's a thought, like, how cool would it be if shit really got good? Like, if you started to wake up and enjoy your life again, if you woke up and you were like, this is an all right place to be, that's what's waiting for some people on the other side of these experiences. And, like, and I'm going to say it again, because I've said it before, it isn't for everybody. But if you're somebody who's called to it, man, I think it could seriously be a game changer. And you mentioned earlier this idea of having a bad trip.
Yes.
And but people will take medications and it'll not work with their body all the time. And you'll accept that, and you'll, you know, deal with that ramification. But on a bad trip, how bad could it be? I mean, do you have some data? Like, and I'm not talking about screaming and going through a primal moment, because that could very well happen, because that's what's supposed to happen. But, like, what's the worst that could happen here? Do people die?
So, I wish I was prepared with these numbers. I can give them at a high level, but not exact, because I don't want to cheat and use Google while talking to you.
You're fine.
At a high level, it's really interesting, going back to the narratives we have in our brain. There's data on this. People die from prescription painkillers, like abusing and using prescription painkillers, at really alarming rates, like very, very alarming rates. That's the number, I don't know, but if you do a quick Google, you'll see, like, how many people die from different painkillers, just not even becoming addicted from them, not becoming addicted to them, but even just, like, an overdose on the prescription painkiller because they were in so much pain. Mm-hmm. So that happens all the time. Beautiful thing about traditional psychedelics like LSD, MDMA, psilocybin, they're actually non-toxic. So you can't overdose and die. You will never hear of somebody dying from too much mushrooms. They will have like a very mind-altering session that might last for days if they, depending on how much they take. But you really can't overdose from traditional psychedelics like mushrooms, MDMA, LSD. Again, not saying you'll have a pleasant experience if you take too much, and not advocating that people just go wild right. with it. But it is important to note that they're low on the toxicity scale and also on the habit-forming scale. So they're not addictive compounds by nature.
Really quick, I'm compelled to, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name right now. I think it was Spencer. Oh crap. There was an episode that I have, and I'll put it in the show notes for everybody so that you can go find it. Stuart Preston. So Sherry, his son died by suicide, and he went on a psychedelic journey to try to find this, to get closer to him in some shape or form. And his podcast was so incredible, and the way he explains how he, like, at first he would go and he would do his 3 or 4 sessions in a row, but now he's to a point where like every couple of years he gets called to it. And so it's not something that, you know, once, it's not like pills, right? Like, I think that's how people think about therapies. It's like, you're not going to take this pill for the rest of your life. Every single day you're going to use it. And then you might use it again, then you might use it again, then some time might pass, and then you might use it again. But I'm just to give a little weight to what you're saying, right? Like, this is how it works. And I'm only just telling, I'm not a doctor, you guys, and I tell you all the time, the podcast called Learn From People Who Lived It, because this is just my experience. I've been through all of this stuff before. It's not as scary as you think. That is not to say it won't be as hard as you think. Sometimes some things are supposed to show up and you're supposed to work through that because that's how you feel better, right? Golly, I want to start to kind of wrap up a little bit with you, but can you tell me some of these companies, you don't have to name the companies that you're working with, but how does the conversation usually begin? You call them and you say, hey, I represent this, you know, this company, and here's what we do. And then are most people like, yeah, I would love to have a meeting. And then do you find out that every CEO of all these companies has all done psychedelics? Because I guess this is what happens.
I don't think I'd be allowed to tell you if that was true. But
okay, yeah, all right, fair enough.
No, I joke.
That's a yes, everybody.
you know, you can sort of guess maybe which industries might be more open to that. Sure. In all honesty, how it works. So one, we have different ways of reaching employers. One is actually doing podcasts like this. So hopefully somebody's listening and they're like, oh, I want that at my company, and I'll reach out. I speak at many different conferences that are catered towards employers and geared towards employers, especially ones focusing on health and mental health.
Good for you. That's cool.
Yeah, I do a lot of speaking at those types of conferences. And then
let me know when you're in Phoenix. Sorry to interrupt, but let me know when you're in Phoenix. I want to come watch.
I'll be there in November speaking. So I just put it on my calendar today. Normally, I wouldn't have that answer so quick, but today I put it on my calendar that I'll be in Phoenix. I've never been there. So November 5th to 7th.
5th to 7th?
Yes.
Remarkable. This may be something kind of cool. Do you know who Lucas Mack is?
No, who is it?
All right, check him out when we're done here. But he's like a breathwork to the stars kind of a guy. And I just did a shamanic breath session with him a couple of like 3 weeks ago, and it was so amazing. And he's going to be here in November too, and I think we're going to put on a huge of like breathwork event, and you should come. You should totally come if it's the same weekend.
Yeah, I would totally come. And also it could be a cool thing for other people from the conference to go to. But anyway,
for sure.
So I reach employers to think through things like that. And then, you know, we selectively will reach out to employers, maybe not pick up the phone, but maybe send an email. If we see an employer is already, you know, doing cutting edge or innovative benefits, we see they have like a culture of wanting to care about their employees. Or if they're offering things like fertility benefits, they're probably more open-minded about thinking about more mental health benefits. So we have different ways of thinking about which employers would be the right fit. Personally, I think everyone's the right fit, but, and then, yeah, we educate them and explain what the benefits are. we explain it from a human perspective. So there's a lot of power in storytelling, but we also explain it from a data perspective, like the numbers I gave you of like, you know, think about 82% of your employees being off of antidepressants. And that's like really impactful for employers because 75% of companies, larger companies, so more than 500 employees in the US are self-funded. So they're actually paying for all of the costs of their employees' medical bills. And so reducing that cost could be huge to them, or reducing the disability cost too. And yes, there are many leaders who are in fortunate and privileged positions and C-suites who have had access to psychedelic therapy. More common than not. And honestly, there's like another component. We're having so much fun talking. We haven't even gotten into this, but there's another component. Usually why someone in a leadership position has had an experience is there's also a lot of evidence about how these medicines help you become more creative. So, you know, we've been sticking to like treating mental health conditions, which is what Entia is for. So I'm not saying like, go do this and you'll become a great painter. But historically, there is evidence that great things have happened as a result of psychedelics, like the invention of the PCR test, like that we used for COVID. The decoding of DNA, like the fact that it's like in this structure, this is supposedly done on like a trip on psychedelics. Yeah. I think the mouse that people used to use for computers, I don't use one anymore, was also invented on psychedelics.
Wait, but no, hold on. You don't use a mouse at all?
No, I mean, like I use the one on my laptop, not.
Use a trackpad. But yeah, I was like, oh, you know, I thought maybe you had some technology with your fingers where you just kind of do this in front of it and it moves.
Yeah, that would be amazing. No, not yet.
It's coming.
But yeah, so when speaking to like leadership at companies, of course, they may not openly say that they've used psychedelics. Some will, some won't. They definitely won't do it in like a very public setting, but some will share with me. There is that element of like, you know, this is something also that could be used to optimize productivity and enhance creativity in teams and get people to collaborate more and work better in teams. So that's, to be clear, that's not Anthea's focus. We're focused on mental health, but those are definite spillover effects that companies are interested in.
I'm telling you, it really does boil down to like, do you have enough kind of courage in a way to let things be even better? Mm-hmm. Right? Like that's kind of what we're getting at here. Or do you want to keep checking out the same book at the library because you know that it's comfortable and you know, all the things, but it's really interesting. It's fascinating. You know, I've got I'm pissed that he's not on this podcast, but typically I either have Dr. Frank Bavakwa or I have Dr. David Lykin, and Dr. David Lykin is a psychiatrist. Mm. And, you know, and so he's his original stance on some psychedelics and some of these drugs, he was never stale and like, no way. Like, you know, I mean, I think he understood that it was even for some people, but I think even he's starting to come around a little bit on especially ketamine because of the amount of PTSD that he deals with and working, you know, with veterans specifically. And I don't know. Get brave, everybody. Like, you know, try something. What's the worst that could happen? You wake up feeling better every day. You set down old patterns that aren't serving you anymore. Like that kind of stuff is exciting. And it's more exciting than you think, because when you do that, not only are you like better for yourself, of course, but you're really good for the people around you. You're really good for your wife. You're really good for your husband. You're really good for your kids, man. Think about that. Like you're really good for your kids because you're not raising them with all the baggage and all the old operating systems. Like the benefits of something like this in this space are very much worth exploring. And I mean that in every sense of the word, like you mentioned, pray on it, meditate on it, breathe on it. Does this speak to you. And if it does, then you should absolutely consider it, because we're on the forefront of this. I believe you're going to be one of the biggest companies in the next 5 years, right? Like, there'll be so many people getting into the space that you are already a pioneer in, because so many people are going to go, hello, about time, let's give this a shot. I don't even know how I want to wrap this conversation up, because I've just really enjoyed our back and forth, quite frankly. What is the future of psychedelics in the workspace?
Great question to wrap up. Before I answer, because before I forget, I wanted to add, since you talked about breath work, I'm changing something. I'll get to your question.
You're fine. I love it.
Did you know that holotropic breath work, which was created by Stan Grof and his partner, his wife, Christina Grof, was actually created because psychedelics were banned. So it was created in 1975 after psychedelics were rescheduled, and Stan Grof wanted another way. Like, he was sitting there so frustrated because he, you know, wanted to have this altered state. So he literally invented with his wife holotropic breathwork to get you to an altered state without drugs. That was like being on psychedelics. So I wanted to like leave that gem for you and the audience. Definitely.
So awesome. Cause I experienced it. What she's saying is real. Like, I did the shamanic session with Lucas Mack and I levitated. I left my body. I told him it was like being on freaking acid or something. Like, it was incredible.
Yeah. It really is. Like, you know, if you do it, like, scan the brain post right after a breathwork session or right after a psychedelic session, or scan the brain of like monks that have been meditating for years. There's many ways to the paths to the top of the mountain. So psychedelics is one, but holotropic breathwork is a really powerful tool. And I'm still going to answer your question. But the other thing I wanted to say that I don't usually bring up on podcasts is there's a book that I highly recommend. I always recommend How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan, but today I'm going to recommend another one, which is Trust, Surrender, Receive by Ann Other. And this is a really incredible book about like what you've been talking about, just trusting the process and letting go. And for people who are curious about psychedelic therapies and want to understand what the experience is like, How to Change Your Mind goes into all of the science. So if you want to understand the science.
The Netflix documentary as well.
Yeah, it's a Netflix documentary as well. But Trust, Surrender, Receive is stories of a therapist and his or her various patients. It's kind of like Chicken Soup for the Soul, if you remember that. Because
I do.
There's many different stories of different patient experiences. And it really shows how important it is to just, you know, let go. So I'll leave your audience with that. And now I'll answer your question, the future of psychedelics in the workplace. Sorry, I threw in some stuff.
That's great. No, I love the tangents. And we will link to all of these things in the show notes. So if we, you know, if you're driving right now, listening to us, and you're on a walk and you're like, damn, I can't write this down, it'll be in the show notes when you get home.
So the future of psychedelics, I really hope for and envision a world in which having psychedelic therapy is as basic and expected of a benefit as having access to dental and vision. It should be right there. It's not for everyone, you're right, but everyone should at least have access to it if they want to. And
yes,
cost shouldn't be a barrier. We should feel comfortable talking about it. Like, I shouldn't have to be scared. I'm not in my company, of course, but I shouldn't have to be scared going to the office and talking to my colleagues of like, hey, I did MDMA therapy last week, and you know, this is what I experienced. These conversations should be more normalized. I hope to see a world in which our provider networks grow, especially in terms of diversity. So we have like more richness in the types of providers we can go to for these medicines. And the last two things, which is a little bit less about the workplace and about psychedelics in general, is I am excited to see how the research grows for using these medicines for children and adolescents. I wouldn't recommend, like, I'm not the scientist, so definitely, like, don't give a kid, like, a high dose of mushrooms. Absolutely not. But kids have trauma and anxiety and behavioral issues. And so I think there's something worth exploring if, at, you know, in this area of, like, maybe at a different dose, or maybe it's a different substance we don't know about, but there's, I hope we can find.
I'm sure there's got to be people working on that right now. We're getting kids stoned somewhere. Absolutely. Yeah. We're seeing what's happening. Yeah. And we should, right? We should explore it, right? Because there could be something, although almost every piece of literature, at least everything I've read, is like 17 and under. No way. No, go. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. What do you know?
17 and under, no go for traditional psychedelics, but ketamine, I do know clinics that use ketamine for adolescents. So even like 14, 15, 16.
Interesting. Okay.
There's just less research. So, and we have to find a way to do this research in safe ways, like obviously in probably animals first, but we need to understand. So I'm not advocating for giving drugs to kids without knowing. I would love for us to find ways to help, you know, children and adolescents with their trauma, because that's kind of the source, like your trilogy, right? Like,
yes,
your trilogy started in childhood. And then I am also excited about drugs that don't have the hallucinogenic component, which is like another area of the research. There's a few companies doing great things.
So in the cannabis world, that would be like a Delta 8, right? Like it has some of the medicinal properties, but it doesn't have the psychoactive effects. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that too, because if we talk about access in the workplace or in the world, not everyone is a good candidate for psychedelics, and not everyone is going to let go of the fear and be ready for being in an altered state. And we just have to accept, even if it's legal, even if it's FDA approved, even if there's tons of data, even if everyone is saying it's great, some people still don't want that altered state. So I hope we can find something for them too.
Me too. I'll tell you where I think it's going. And I'm going to be bolder than this. I think there will, we're going to have psychedelic team building exercises. Like, I'm not even kidding. I'm telling you, big companies are going to take all their suits, and anybody who wants to opt in, they're bringing everybody to Fiji. Everybody's going to have psilocybin and just have these incredible experiences, and they're going to invent the next great product or the next great advancement within their company. And I just really see it as being something that brings people together because of the creative component that you mentioned earlier. Like, it does open up your mind in a way that allows you to see things and solve problems that you couldn't in the past. And so I could definitely see progressive companies chewing on. What do you know now? You know all these things.
That's already there. So there's like articles, I think Wall Street Journal or Forbes have both covered this, maybe Axios, but companies are already, some companies, not all, some companies are already doing retreats. Unfortunately, it's not like for the entire company, but for certain teams or departments or for leadership, where they are going to retreat centers in Jamaica or Costa Rica and doing psychedelics as part of team building. So that is now.
Love that. All right. Well, listen, I'm going to put this up on the screen for those of you that are watching on our YouTube channel, but this is the website for Anthea, and you can go and visit and see everything that they've got going on. And like I said, if it speaks to you, just tune in, right? Sammy Simpson was on our show, and he's a huge proponent of psychedelics. And he says, if it gets your attention, pay attention. And I love that. Such a simple way to think about it. Sherry, thank you so much for coming on and helping us understand this world a little bit more. And for employers, employees, providers, anybody who's in this space, go to the website. We'll put the link in the show notes, and it'll be great. So everybody wants to know, as we leave, are you leaving as soon as we hang up? Are you going to do ketamine right now?
No, I'm going to go for a run.
Oh, that's right. Because this didn't even come up on the podcast, but you run a half marathon a day.
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
You must be in insane shape. Like, I mean, that takes so much endurance.
I'm not. I eat a lot of bread and chocolate to offset the benefits of the running.
Bravo. Now we know why. Now we know why. Yeah. Super cool to chat with you, Sherry. Thank you.
Thank you too.
All right. We'll see everybody next time on Learn From People Who Lived It.
We have three goals with Learn From People Who Lived It. 1, to help you feel less alone. 2, encourage you to seek out a coach, a therapist, a church, anyone who can help you get through your journey and find some healing. 3, when you're ready, share your story with us.
Find Learn From People Who Lived It wherever you get podcasts. Search it using all one word, Learn From People Who Lived It.
You've probably heard me say this before, but most of the things that kill us are preventable, and that's exactly why I put my heart in his hands, in his care. I'm talking about Dr. Robert Todd Hurst and HealthSpan MD. He's my cardiologist because I appreciate his holistic approach to heart health. There's nothing out there like HealthSpan MD, his AFib reversal program, his CAD reversal program. Get the link on the resources page at learnfrompeoplewholivedit.com.